So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains today, and getting over those aches and pains with Lori Tyne-Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Lori, great to have you back.
Good to be here.
Bill Boisenault as well with us. Bill's an Associate Professor in Physical Therapy at the UW Medical School. Bill, great to see you too.
Always good to be here, Larry. Thank you.
What are you guys seeing these days? Anything unusual coming across your practices, Bill?
I think Bucky Badger will be visiting us with shoulder pain.
Oh, yeah.
After Saturday, don't you think? In fact, I heard there were three Buckys doing push-ups, so we may have a lot of business.
Yeah, I imagine. Boy, push-ups, those can be hard on your shoulders, your rotator cuff.
It would bother my shoulder.
Yeah, that's, man, I wonder how they train for that.
Well, and they have to do it every time somebody scores. And,
right, and so you have to do the whole.
They would have to do it several hundred.
Right.
Times. And you noticed that Bucky would go off, away, and then a new one. And then Bucky would come back and he'd look taller.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope he's not on
steroids. Exactly. I think they were hoping that there would be no more Badger possessions.
Right.
Seeing if they could.
At some point
Exactly. They had the headphones on. They were talking to the coaches upstairs in the box. Come on, put in the high school team.
So besides Bucky, I think yard work. This is the time of the year for yard work that people get into trouble, and of course looking ahead to winter around the corner and the shoveling and stuff. So
it's time to start training for that.
Yeah.
Well, Roger in Spring Green, I don't know if he's in training or not, but he has a question for you, so let's go to Roger. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. How are you and your guest this morning?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I'll give you a little background on me. I'm 52 years old, in good health. I was a martial arts instructor for 20 years, and then I'm a truck driver now for the last 12 years. So I'm pretty good shape, I may be overweight about maybe 15 pounds, about 5'10", about 230 pounds. My question is, I have this index finger on my left hand that's giving me a shooting pain, and I don't know what it's from. It's not on any finger other than the index finger on my left side. And it just like the pain just shoots up. I don't take any medication. I have never taken any aspirin or any kind of pills or anything like that in my whole life. But this pain, I deal with it, but I don't know what it is. It's like if you slammed your finger in a door and then you feel that throbbing pain right at the tip of your nerve-ended finger. And I'm just going to ask, what do you think it could be? That finger. That's it, not on any other finger.
Is the pain constant?
It happens every, it's like a pulsating pain that shoots right to the end of the tip. It could go for about a minute, and then it happens maybe about 30, 40 times, 20 times a day, and then all I do is I just take my fingertip and curl it real tight to probably, reduce that pain by creating a different pain, It's just that index finger.
So it's like slamming your foot in the door to get rid of your finger pain.
Yeah.
Almost. Okay. But I'm just like curling it up, like you're holding a pool stick or something.
Right. Okay.
So, Roger, was there an injury?
I'm sorry?
Was there an injury?
No. Like I said, I don't have any injuries on any of my hands or fingers.
Okay. And how long has this been going on?
About 2 years.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Any problems? Any pain?
Actually, over time.
Any pain shooting up
into
your...
it might have happened maybe in the last 2 years, gone from maybe four times a day up to like maybe 20 times in a day, I constantly have to curl the finger up.
Okay.
All right. So, Roger, any pain that shoots up into your forearm towards your elbow, or is it just in the finger?
Just in the fingertip. It happens from the joint, almost from... The first crease and the fingertip to the tip of it.
All right.
That quarter of an inch or half of an inch.
Okay. And is there any swelling or redness?
Swelling or redness?
I'm sorry?
Any swelling or redness?
No, nothing at all.
Okay.
Putting pain right at the index finger.
Okay. All right. Well, it could be a couple of things. One, it could be related to a tendon that attaches at the tip of your finger. It could be a nerve that is coming out of your hand into your finger. I mean, the other possibility is potentially something coming from your neck. Or a combination of those can give you that kind of throbbing pain and into the index finger. If you haven't seen anybody, considering how long it's been going on, it's happening 20, 30 times a day, you know, I would go and have somebody look at your hand and that arm all the way up to your neck, Roger, and have them examine all these different areas and figure out where this is coming from.
About maybe 30 years ago, we had a relative come over to the house, and the only thing I know on that arm is he, you know how you take somebody's arm and pull it behind your back like you give them an arm bar in the back?
Yeah.
He did that to me about 30 years ago in the kitchen when the family was having breakfast.
Okay. So, but 30 years ago, you wouldn't think that it would be just starting up in the last 2 years.
Right.
No.
Right.
Arthritis might be, would that be a possibility or not?
It could be. It'd be very unusual to have it isolated specifically to that joint unless there was something in his work that really overused that. If he had some kind of, you know, pinching or fine work, if he was using with fine instruments, like a dentist working with a, you know, fine instruments in your hands or something.
Truck.
Yeah, but he was in martial arts. I don't know if he, you know, possibly injured something at that time and didn't realize it. But it's unusual to have it so localized. But again, it could be there's some tendons that attach right in that last joint. So it could be right at that tendon insertion.
Yeah.
Or as Bill said, it could be a nerve. He could have the wiring in your hands, especially to your index and thumb, is pretty fine. He could have a little nerve entrapment in there of some sort. So we should get it sorted out.
Okay. So get in to see a physical therapist then, or probably a doctor first?
It could be either, I think, physician or a PT, as long as they examine that whole arm up into his neck to screen things.
There you go, Roger. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Tony in Franklin next. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I recently had an x-ray of my right shoulder and found out that it's severely arthritic. And I was just wondering what the procedure will be to help that problem.
What took you to the doctor in the first place? Were you having shoulder pain?
Yeah, hurting very much, and it's with certain movements, very isolated movements.
Okay. I expect that the first step would be to send you to physical therapy to do some strengthening exercises. For someone who has bad arthritis in the shoulder, I typically like isometric exercise where the shoulder is not getting resistance through a range of motion, but that you're pushing against a stationary object. Because that repetitive movement in an arthritic joint can sometimes get it stirred up. Sometimes they'll do some cortisone injections in the area to calm it down if it's really painful, and that way your physical therapy can get some traction. But in general, in the big picture, if it's arthritis of the main joint itself, the glenohumeral joint, you're looking at basically pain control measures, strengthening, improving function, and trying to delay things like total shoulder replacement.
Wow. I do stationary weightlifting, so I do, I guess, I suppose that includes isometric activity.
It would usually weight training is what we call isotonic in that you're moving through a range of motion. Does that weight training bother your shoulder?
Yes, certain do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, then it'd be a good idea to see a physical therapist who could look at what you're doing and help you modify it so that you can continue doing strengthening, but in a way that doesn't aggravate your shoulder or increase your pain. There are ways to strengthen that are less painful, and they can guide you in that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yep,
all
thanks.
Right, good luck, Tony.
Don in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Don.
How are you, Dave?
Good. What can we do for you?
I've been diagnosed about 2 years ago having peripheral neuropathy. And I was wondering, it seems to be getting a little bit worse, particularly on my left side. My left leg and arm seem to be getting number all the time. And I wondered if either of your experts would care to recommend any physical exercises or procedures that might help slow this down.
Do you know why the neuropathy is there, Don?
Well, everybody always asks me, well, then you have diabetes, and I don't.
Okay.
Because I guess that's the traditional cause of it, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is a common cause of it.
Yeah.
But there's a number of causes of it. And it sounds like they're not quite sure why for you. Is that correct?
Nobody ever attempted to tell me why.
Okay. All right. Because that makes a difference whether there's something a physical therapist could do to stop this or, you know, or reverse it. Certainly, there are some types of exercises, whether it's desensitization, whether it's balance or proprioceptive work, to try to enhance the function of your nervous system, and certainly to help prevent injuries and skin problems developing. But a lot of it has to do, but in terms of, you know, halting or slowing the progression, you know, that would be questionable unless they know exactly why it's happening.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the role of physical therapy is to optimize the remaining systems to, for example, increase your vascular supply to those areas so that the remaining tissues can have as good a health as possible because they're getting a sufficient vascular supply. So guiding you through appropriate aerobic exercise. And as Bill said, balance exercises, especially in the lower extremity, to avoid trips and falls where you can sustain secondary injuries and so on.
Yeah, my cat gives me fits walking in front of me.
Yes.
Exactly. And I've seen people, yes, who have been injured falling over their pets at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pets, throw rugs. You've got to be careful with your shoes left on the floor because you're missing some of that input. And hopefully your vision's good to help compensate for that as well.
My vision is about 2300.
Ooh.
Okay. All right. Well, that's where some balance and proprioceptive work, and a lot of that you could do at home with the proper guidance, again, to help prevent some of those things from occurring.
So I should look for an exercise program that would just sort of loosen this up more or do?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily loosen up. It's to really promote the function of your nervous system,
okay,
which relates to balance and sensation and reflexes. You know, they go from the skin to the muscle groups. And that's where, again, seeing a physical therapist can help develop a good program for you and one that is safe for you to do as well.
Uh-huh.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jamie in Green Bay. Let's turn to you now. Hi, Jamie.
Good morning. I have a friend who woke up one morning last week with excruciating pain in his left arm on his tricep, he said. And he said he didn't think he had done anything to bring this on. He'd been raking leaves a few days before, but he didn't think it was related. The pain got worse. He did go to a chiropractor who, with an x-ray, diagnosed degenerative disc disease between, I think, C4 and C5, somewhere in there. Did some manipulation and some electrotherapy thing. And it's been getting worse and going down his arm, which they said is a bad thing. And he did go to an urgent care center where they gave him a prescription for prednisone, and that is helping. But now his general practitioner wants to do an MRI, and he's just like, gosh, I don't know if I want to go that far, if that's going to really show anything. Do you have any suggestions as to where he should be looking or what he could be doing?
Well, it sounds like if it's going down the arm further, then it probably is nerve related. You know, there are some other joint conditions that sometimes can wake someone up from a sleep with excruciating pain. But it sounds like this is probably more nerve related, and probably related to his neck.
Mm-hmm.
You only get so much information on an X-ray or a plain film. It may pick up, you know, some arthritic changes, but it doesn't always give you a clear picture of nerves being involved or which nerves might be involved. The big thing is, does he have numbness or weakness? If he's having numbness or weakness, then you want to address this with probably an MRI and to monitor it really closely. If it's pain, not that pain is fun to have, but if it's pain without numbness and weakness, then that's where a physical therapist can potentially help. One, try to figure out why this started in the first place and then what can be done, whether it relates to posture or using some traction or some sort of exercise program to get that pain up out of his arm.
Fantastic. I'll pass that along to him.
All
thank
right.
you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. And Maria in Washington Island, your turn. Hi, Maria.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning. Love your program.
Thank you.
I had a question. My husband's in his early 70s. I'm in my mid-60s. We've been lucky enough to take pretty good care of ourselves, and we usually try to walk at least an hour a day. And I was saying to him, after a long car drive, I'm talking like just 3 hours, 4 hours, I get out of the car, I'm so stiff. And I said, You think with all the stretching and everything else we do, it wouldn't be that way. Now, I don't know if this is just the aging process or what, and so that's why I'm calling.
I'd have to say it probably is the aging process. As we get older, our tissues become a little bit more stiff. Our joints don't like to stay in one position. So in a car ride, although you're moving around some in your seat, you're not moving around in a way that lubricates your joints, especially your spine. Your spine generally doesn't like that vibration of the car. And even though you might move your arms and legs, your spine typically stays loaded in the same way. And the joints of your spine and all the joints and your big joints too, your hips, your knees, your shoulders, they like to move. When they are moved, there's fluid in the joints that lubricates the joint surfaces and makes them move smoothly. But when they sit for a long time and they're not being moved, it's a little bit like the oil in your car. When you're isn't driven, the oil sits in the oil pan. But when the engine is running, the oil is dispersed out over all the balls and bearings and things that have your car, and it lubricates them. Well, when you're sitting in your car, your joints aren't being lubricated in that way. So you do feel stiff. Anytime you're in one position for a long period of time and then you go to move, you're going to be stiff until you get that synovial fluid moving through the joints, and it decreases its viscosity and then lubricates and you feel better. So the take-home message is, if you're going to be in the car, to stop more often and get out and move around a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, no, 3 hours is a long time.
I'm stiff after being in the car for 3 hours.
Yeah, I am too. Dan in Campbellsport, it's on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning. How are you all doing today?
Great.
My question is in regards to an Achilles rupture that I suffered about 2.5 years ago. And I went ahead and had the surgical repair done on the tendon at the time. And about 6 weeks after that, I ended up falling on that leg and rupturing it again.
Oh.
Yeah. So nice. I had to go back in, have the surgery done, which really set back my therapy at the time. Like I said, it's about 2.5 years out now, and it seems like I'm having a real rough time getting that calf muscle back to full strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. My question is it possible that the muscle atrophied to a point where it's not even really possible to rebuild it again?
Mm, good question. How old are you, Dan?
I'm 41.
Okay. Well, two things. One, that's possible. Second is, remember that your muscle fibers attach to the tendon. And you ruptured that tendon not once, but twice. And so when they reattach it, they aren't able to attach every muscle fiber back down to the tendon because there's probably not sufficient tendon of good quality to attach it to. So whatever muscle fibers are no longer attached to a tendon will atrophy. So
okay.
I would say that you're probably not going to get it all back, and it may be a function of not being able to get at your therapy fast enough, but it's probably the greater proportion is probably because you ruptured it twice and that muscle fiber isn't attached to a tendon anymore.
Okay.
Dan, if I can ask, when was the last time you saw a physical therapist?
Oh, boy, that was probably at least a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Okay, so it was pretty close to after the second surgery.
Right.
You know, I would agree with Lori. At this far out, I'm not sure how much more can change, but, you know, it might not hurt to go in and have at least look at you once. They can give you some input whether there's anything they can offer you at this point in time.
Uh-huh.
It may be, especially with the scarring that you have, doing some really deep massage in that area combined with certain types of strengthening or balance activities that you may start noticing a difference in your step and climbing stairs and things like that.
Right.
You know, so if you've got the time or the means to do it, I mean, a visit can't hurt just to get an opinion.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good luck. Thanks, Dan, for calling. By the way, you can join in, too, as we talk aches and pains and sprains and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenoff. The number, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Ricardo in Madison, we're on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'm a cyclist, and I've been riding for a very, very long time, probably around almost 30 years. And I've developed in the last 2 years a knee pain. And from what I read online, I think I might have a medial meniscus tear. And this is complicated by, I think, an unequal leg length that I have between the right and left leg. And the right leg is shorter. So I put a lift in. So my questions are, and I'm going for a doctor's appointment at the end of the week, so I want to know what questions to ask. Is it a bad idea to put a lift in the right shoe? And it's something like 3/4 of an inch. And what else should I be looking for to deal with this inside the knee pain?
Well, I think first you need to get the right diagnosis. You'll need to have a physical exam to sort out the medial meniscal tear. Most of the time, meniscus tears happen as a result of an acute injury. You can have degenerative meniscal tears. They usually happen as a result of weight bearing and more impact activities than with cycling. So first get the right diagnosis. Second of all, what was the temporal relationship between putting the lift in your shoe and the onset of your knee pain? I mean, have you been using the lift for a long time?
No, I've been using the lift for a very short time, and the onset of the pain was about 2 years ago.
Okay, so you had the pain first, and then you switched to the... And how did you find out that you had a leg length difference?
I have a physical therapist next door, and she's looking at me, complaining about my knee. And she went into the living room, got a magazine, my wife's fashion magazine, and stuck it underneath one foot and looked at my back and said, your spine is straight now, and your hips are straight now, and your right shoulder doesn't dip anymore.
Okay. All right. Well, very good.
That's an indicator.
Exactly. That's all good. Well, I would say to first of all, when you see the physician, to get the right diagnosis. And then second, after that, I would go to physical therapy and get evaluated. At our clinic, at our Research Park Clinic and our sports physical therapy department, they do examination of cyclists on their bikes, and they are trained in that area. So it's a good place to go if your insurance allows it to get a good evaluation from a sports physical therapist who has a lot of expertise in cycling.
I think that is an option for me.
Great.
And Ricardo, also, if you go to see a physical therapist and a physician, well, bring your lift in with you so they can look at that lift. Sometimes a lot of people have leg length discrepancies, and there are times where we do try to correct it, but typically don't correct it fully right off the bat because the assumption is your body has adapted to this discrepancy over years. And so sometimes putting a lift in that's too much of a lift can cause other problems down the road. So just make sure you bring that lift in with you so they can look at that.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. LaDonna in Dousman, your turn. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling about a problem with my heel. 11 years ago, I had a problem where, I don't know if it was a bone spur or whatever, but I got a cortisone injection in the heel after a number of weeks of just pain. And now I'm starting with my left heel. And last week I was at the doctor, and he told me to get these spongy cups to put in the heel.
Mm-hmm.
And I did buy them, and I like to walk on my treadmill, which I was doing when I made this call. But I don't know if I'm aggravating it more, or they told me years ago to use a frozen bottle of water and roll it on your foot.
Yep.
And so I've been doing that, but I'm thinking, am I irritating it by walking more? Because by the end of the day, it's so painful.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to get another cortisone shot.
Right. Well, don't get another cortisone shot. Get a referral to physical therapy and go see a physical therapist. You're doing some of the right things, but there's more things that can be done to help take care of this problem short of a cortisone injection. So I would get in to see a physical therapist. They can do a good examination. They can give you some specific stretching exercises for that plantar fascia. They can look at your heel cup to see if that's the right thing. There's all different kinds of inserts and modifications to your shoe for this problem. Sometimes a heel cup works. Sometimes an arch support is better depending upon the mechanics of your foot. So I'd get a good exam. The question about walking in the treadmill, is your foot worse at the end of the day and the days you've walked on your treadmill?
Not really, because I walk a lot. I mean, I do walk a lot, but by the end of the night, it's bad no matter if I walk or not.
Okay, that's kind of the information I was looking for. Then I'd continue my walking.
Okay.
If it's possible to find a soft place to walk, like on a track or a trail or something, that's generally preferable for all your joints. But if it's no different when you're walking on your treadmill or not, I'd keep up my exercise program.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, we have more callers online here. Let us go to Martin in Eagle River. Hi, Martin.
Hello. I have a question about if there's a way I can extend my knee bend past what it is. Several years ago, I had a full knee replacement surgery, and the physical therapist's therapy would be covered up until the time where they reached 105 or 110 degrees bend in that knee. And actually, the surgeon, to get me to that level, they had to, the surgeon called it a manipulation. They'd put me under, and then he would actually break the scar tissue, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
They did that twice. And, but anyway, I'm at about 105, 110 degrees. It's been that way for years, but it's very difficult to get up and down off of a floor. It's very difficult to do just day-to-day chores, you know, with bending and doing different kinds of things, because my left knee bends a lot more than my right knee, but my right knee that had the surgery, like I say, it only gets to about 105, 110 degrees, and it's a little difficult to do certain things. Is there some way that I can extend that bend or get a get a bigger, larger bend in
the knee? Right. Well, it's interesting, Martin. You've pointed out a very important fact. You know, people say, oh, if you get to 100, 110 degrees after your knee replacement, well, that's just fine. And there's research that's been out for a very long time that shows if you have a knee bend anything less than 120 degrees, you change significantly how you move. And what that does is it loads other joints. It loads your hips. It loads your spine. It loads your other leg. And it puts all those other joints at risk for problems. So getting more than 110 degrees, getting up to 120 degrees really is preferable. Question is whether or not at this point in time you can actually gain any more. Given that you had manipulations twice, I'd say you're probably not going to get a lot more, but it's sure worth trying. You know, I'm sure that they showed you all kinds of stretching exercises to do. And as long as you're stretching and you're bending that knee back and you're feeling nothing other than stretching or pulling, that's fine. But if you're feeling any pinching, stabbing, aching, anything like that, then you should discontinue that.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Larry Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email in from Arnold, who says he's a male, late 60s, never had foot pains until this year. Now the balls of his feet tend to hurt when he walks any appreciable distance. He's tried various orthopedic inserts in his shoes, and they help in varying degrees. The soreness doesn't go away entirely. Any suggestions?
The balls of his feet. Well, mechanically, in your balls of your feet, you have an arch that goes not the long way, but goes crosswise, a transverse arch. And sometimes you can have a fallen arch there. So I don't know if he's tried a metatarsal arch pad as one possibility. You can also get neuromas in that area, so that can cause a burning kind of pain. He just said he has pain in the balls of his feet. He didn't say if it was burning pain or just an aching pain. You can also get arthritis in those metatarsal joints, so that's a possibility as well. So when, you know, if he hasn't seen anyone to determine the cause or the source of the pain, I'd probably start with that. Sometimes you can work backwards by putting in different, you know, inserts and arch supports, and if it fixes it, then you say, oh, that's what it was. But if he's tried those things and it's not working, it might be time to go the other direction.
Yeah, I guess I agree, and I would question the inserts. Has he gone to a drugstore and bought things off the shelf? Was he given inserts that are kind of one-size-fits-all, which aren't bad places to start? But if they really don't help considerably, probably worthwhile having someone to examine his foot and potentially fabricate an insert specifically for his foot and his foot design. Then it may be a better chance that that he'll have more success than he's had to this point.
And Valerie emailed us. She's a pretty active person, does a lot of walking with her yellow lab. And over the past few weeks, she's noticed each time she'd go out for her regular 2.25-mile walk with her dog, that both sides of both of her knees would become quite swollen. She figures it had to do with walking in the cold temperatures, but in some warm days this past week, she still had the same issues. Her knees don't hurt. She wears custom orthotics, which haven't been replaced in about 2 years. Today, she went to see a podiatry doctor who fitted her with new orthotics. Do you think the new orthotics will cure the knee problems, or are there stretches that she should do following walks to help bring the swelling down in the knees?
Hmm. Well, the question is, why is she getting swelling? That's not a typical complaint. Usually you get pain, and you may have swelling accompanying that. It's not very common to have swelling without pain. Right. So the first thing I thought was, you know, a rheumatoid arthritis or some other sort of systemic joint disease. But I'd say, you know, before I suggested any kind of exercise, I'd want to know why she's getting swelling. That's not a typical first complaint.
Yeah, I would agree. And if she goes in, and I think I recommend she go see if she has a family physician, a personal physician, and maybe walk before she goes in. It sounds like the swelling comes and goes. If she can go in with the swelling, that may help with the diagnosis.
Yeah.
There you go. Andrew in Bruce, Wisconsin. We're on to you now. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I'm a factory worker, and I do quite a bit of physical work. But up until the last couple of months, I haven't been bothered by it. But if I sit around for any length of time, especially like a car drive or sitting at home, my legs and my whole lower extremities start to cramp up. I was just wondering if there's anything I can do for that.
So, Andrew, is it both legs?
Yes, both legs.
All right. And does it feel like it's in the muscle, or does it feel like it's more in joints?
It's a muscle kind of thing.
Okay.
Especially like my buttocks. I don't know why that would be so much.
All right.
It's painful, almost makes you cry kind of deal.
Okay. And any numbness or tingling along with this cramping?
No.
Okay. So skin feels normal to you.
Right.
Okay. And any trouble walking up and down stairs?
No trouble walking. When I'm actually moving around, I feel good.
Okay, all right. So it's more after you've been sitting for a while. Yeah, you know, it's a couple different possibilities. One, it could be related to your back, possibly, and tied in with the sitting. It could be that it's just some muscle weakness, or something with your hips that more relate to the sitting as well. You know, again, it'd be hard to recommend specific exercises over the air here based on what you're describing. But, you know, if you saw a physical therapist, they could examine you. They could examine your back, your hips. They could look at strength, and they could test sensation and see if they can figure out where this is coming from. And, you know, I might be able to give you a little more guidance.
Okay.
Once you get up and start moving, how long does this take for this cramping to go away?
5 minutes or so.
Okay.
Not a long time, really, once you get up and moving.
Okay. All right. So that's good. That's good. So it may be something related to the sitting posture. If it's driving, maybe the car seat. And again, maybe it'll give some suggestions to help keep this from happening, at least to the degree that it sounds like it is.
Okay.
You don't think it's anything nutritional and lacking?
Well, it's possible, and we do get calls. Oftentimes, it's the cramping at night that people get, as opposed to just related to sitting. So I would think if it was nutritional, you would probably have it at some other times, most likely.
It doesn't happen when I'm laying down. but it happens just when I'm sitting upright.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make it sound like it's postural, because, again, the nutritional things like not enough potassium or not enough fluids really tend to bother people at night.
Yeah, the restless legs is what they get.
Yeah, and since you're not having any of that at night when you're laying down, it really should follow that same pattern, since it's only when it's sitting. It's probably related to that posture.
Okay, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Andrew. Sue in Sussex, let's turn to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you. I'm calling because I have a question regarding, I get some pain in the bones in my feet I'm pretty active and I walk during the day and things like that. Then when I sit down in the evening to read or watch TV or something and I get up, the bones in my feet are hurt. They hurt a lot. And I also have some of that in my right hand in the nape of my neck, but doesn't bother me as much as in my feet. So I'm wondering if this is some kind of an arthritis. Where's the best place for me to go for a diagnosis for this? My family practitioner? How long do I wait? I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'd probably start there, since you're having it in more than one joint. You're having it in both your feet and sometimes your hands and sometimes your neck. So I'd probably start there.
Okay.
It's possible that it is an arthritis-related condition and that it bothers your feet the most because you use them the most, because you're walking around on them all day. And then when you stop and rest, then they start to get sore. So you may... it'd be good to see a physical therapist in that case who can look at your foot posture, look at your shoes and see what you're typically wearing and see if they can provide you some relief by recommendations about shoes or shoe inserts that might help you. But I would start probably with your family physician, given the multi-joint nature of it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And on to James in Madison. Hi, James.
Hey, good morning, folks. I have a question which I'd like to refer back to the person who called in who had nerve pain on his fingertip.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had something similar to this, and I don't know the origin of it either, but coincidentally, I just got out of the hospital. I had kidney failure about a year and a month ago. And 2 weeks after I was out of the hospital, I developed this very sharp stabbing pains and numbness in my left hand, pinky and ring finger, also symmetrically on the other side, but not nearly as bad. The pain was real bad, like a 9, if you can look at a scale of 0 to 10. Now, I just started to rub it and stimulate it, and I did it continuously, and making fists and opening and closing. And the doctor prescribed gabapentin, which seemed to have no effect, really. But, again, another coincidence, I stopped taking the gabapentin, and I continued to rub and stimulate that area, and my pain went from a 9 to about a 7.5, then down to a 3. Now, it's still numb in that area, and I think I'm doing the right thing because I'm making progress, certainly with the pain, and I'd love to get my feeling back because I play guitar and piano, so those fingers are kind of important.
Yeah.
So I might recommend to the fellow, I've been always had it for a couple of years, but maybe just stimulating that area may help with the pain. I'm not a doctor, but anecdotally, it worked for me.
I think that sounds, that you're correct, that's what he's doing when he's doing the bending, where he's curling it.
Sure.
I think he's doing exactly what you said, and that is trying to stimulate it. And maybe just that constant movement does help increase the circulation to the area and helps with the pain. So,
I'll even just put a wrap on it, and just to wrap something around the two fingers, with the ace bandage. And that, it seems to give it some stimulation just by being wrapped. Using it. I had a question for you also. Congestive heart failure, boy, is that a scary-sounding thing. And I had some girl with broken English tell me that I had that over the telephone. Of course, I should have been told from my doctor one-on-one. It scared the heck out of me. It sounds scary, like I said, congestive heart failure. I know a little bit more about it now, but not as much as I'd like to. What's the prognosis on something like that? What are the causes of congestive heart failure? What are the type of treatments that, if any, that might be used to stop the process, if not reverse it?
Well, there's different types of congestive heart failure. It can be right-sided, can be left-sided, can be both-sided, and that certainly ties into the prognosis. From a treatment perspective, it's working very, very closely with your physician. There's a variety of medications that they can try. There's lifestyle changes you try to make in terms of diet, keep your blood pressure under control. And if there's any other health issues, you know, you mentioned the kidney problems as well, you know, sometimes that can be tied together. So it's usually pretty complex, and you need to work closely with a specialist in this area. But it's hard to kind of give you a prognosis. It depends on the type and the stages that you may be in.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls here as we talk aches and pains and sprains and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Lori and Franklin up next. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
I am having a problem with what I'm self-diagnosing it as neuropathy in my toes. Is that there
okay.
is such a thing, isn't there? Well, what's happening is I get, I've had some hip problems, sciatic nerve problems specifically, and then I'm noticing, I've got a screwed up spine and never mind. I just think it's a rotation kind of problem. Anyway, down in the toes, it's painful and at times numb toes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nerves. I'm sure it's nerves.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk, well, that hurts. So I've been stuffing cotton in and around some of those toes. It's not the big toe. It's not the second one. It's the ones after that.
Okay.
The second and
third through third five.
And fourth. Okay. Right, huh?
Three through five. Yeah.
So, and it's mostly the right foot, but sometimes the left foot too. So what the heck is going on? Am I doing the right thing to stuff the cotton between those toes?
Well, I think the cotton, for at least short term, if it gives you some relief, that sounds like it can't be bad. It can't hurt you necessarily. I guess the question I would have is, and you're right, and it sounds like nerve. So is it nerve endings in your foot that are the problem, or is it related to your spine? And again, the fact that it's in both feet, again, ties either could be something spinal or it could be something more systemic in nature that's impacting your nervous system. And so I wouldn't rely only on the cotton as a treatment program. Have you seen your medical doctor regarding this recently?
No, it's on my list.
Okay, good. Well, okay. Well, that's
good. Put it up toward the top.
Move it up,
right.
on your priority list.
That's what I would do, Lori, especially with the things you're describing and the numbness. You know, you want to protect those nerves as much as possible, but I really need to figure out why and where the problem is coming from.
Because that's where your treatment will be directed, whether it's directed locally at your toes. You know, they might use a medication for neuropathy if everything else is clear. But if it's actually coming from your spine and you have a history of sciatica, then the intervention may be directed at your spine. So you don't want to shotgun and start doing all these things. You want to find the source and focally treat that.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Chris in Butternut, Wisconsin. Hi, Chris.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
Well, about 8 years ago, I got hurt over in Iraqa and used to have extreme pain going on my left leg. And now I don't have any pain going on the left leg anymore. It's shooting down my right leg. And now the pain is so bad right now that my right foot has kind of turned out to the right and it drags. I don't have enough strength to pick it up or...
Mm. And the original was a fall or something like that?
Yeah, it was a couple different things.
Yeah. All right.
Chris, have you seen anybody for this recently?
Yeah, I went to the VA a couple times about it, but it's kind of hard to have them do anything about it. They usually try to say it's due to PTSD that I think I have pain going down my leg. That's what I was told a couple times.
Okay. All right. Have you been in there since the foot started dragging?
What's that?
Have you gone to the VA since your foot started dragging, the weakness in your
foot? No, I haven't. I got I called their hotline. They said to go to the emergency room, but it's a 6-hour round trip to go to the emergency room.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can understand the distance. And, you know, the pain is one thing. The weakness is another. I mean, it can be a variety of sources. But the fact that the foot dragging and the weakness is, it sounds like it's relatively new and they haven't seen it, I would make a priority to go in and be seen. You know, they can check your nervous system out for strength and sensation. And there's different types of testing they can do to help make sure that there's not pressure on a nerve someplace. But, you know, with your right foot complaint, I'd go in and get that seen pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait any longer. If you're having that kind of change, it's only going to create additional problems. Okay. And if you're having that kind of weakness and numbness.
Yeah, need to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Yep, good luck.
All right, thanks. Ann in McHenry, Illinois. Hello to you.
Hello, thank you. I have a question. I have some periodic pain that goes down the outside of one of my thighs from the hip to just above the knee. And a couple of times over the last couple of months, I've heard something called the IT band, and I'm wondering if that's what has been affected. I'm wondering if you can tell me what the IT band is and what kind of symptoms I would experience if it's been affected somehow.
Oh, well, the IT band stands for the ilio, meaning it comes from your ilium, the big wings on your hip bone, iliotibial. So the tibial is the big shin bone. So it's a thick band of fascia that originates up around your hip and attaches to a couple muscles around your hip. And then it tracks down the outside of your leg and attaches just below your knee. And it typically causes symptoms in two spots. One, on the outside of your hip at your big hip bone, where it glides over a bony prominence and there's a bursa there. And then also closer to your knee, where there's again a bursa between the band and the ball of your femur, the big ball at your knee joint. And if that band is overused and that bursa gets irritated, then every time you step, it kind of snaps back and forth and creates a bursitis there. So treatments are usually directed at stretching out the hip muscles that where the iliotibial band originates. We look at your posture, and because we always ask the question, why are you having problems with one side and not the other? Because typically an iliotibial band problem is an overuse problem. It's not an acute injury. So we look at your leg length. We look at your posture. We look at your flexibility. We look at your foot posture, your knees, and your strength to see why you're having this problem now. And then we would address the specific underlying problem.
Okay, so it would be good if I went to a physical therapist to get this checked out then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do I have to have a referral to do something like that?
Not necessarily. For Medicare and Medicaid at this point in time, yes. Most insurance companies do cover therapy without a referral, but if you call the clinic and ask them, they should be able to provide that information for you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Ann, for calling. And Jody in Superior, on to you now. Hi, Jody.
Hi. See, I have a problem with my left foot. It's on the inside of my foot, more towards the top. I have a lot of pain in the evening, and especially when I'm sleeping, I get sharp pains on the inside of my foot. And if I stand with my feet flat, the bone on the inside of my left foot towards the top is actually bigger than the one on my right foot. And I've tried wearing different shoes with different support, and I just can't seem to find anything that works. And the pain just, it seems to be getting progressively worse. I'm just wondering what that might be.
So there was no injury to your foot?
No, and not at all.
How long has it been going on?
It's been going on probably about 6 months now.
Okay. And you can't relate it to any change in your activity, change in shoe wear, anything like that? It just sort of showed up insidiously?
Right.
Okay. And have you seen anybody for it?
No, I haven't yet. Somebody mentioned that it sounded like that plantar fasciitis.
Uh-huh. Well, it... typically, plantar fasciitis is painful back at your heel, and it's painful first thing in the morning and doesn't typically bother you while you sleep. Yours sounds different from that, and if that bone appears bigger than the other one and you haven't had an acute injury, then sort of the next thing I think of is some arthritis in your midfoot. And you could be getting some enlargement of the joints in the area. But your next stop shopping should be a medical professional to take a look at this, because it sounds like you have some mechanical abnormalities at your foot. So the question is why, and finding the cause to that. So you can see a physical therapist. You can see your primary care physician and get referred to physical therapy. But having somebody who can take a look at the mechanics from your hip to the floor and figure out why you're having this problem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lynette from Madison says, I sprained my ankle pretty bad 3 weeks ago. How soon can I get PT? I wear an air cast. I can put weight on it, and there is still a little swelling in areas where the air cast does not cover.
Yesterday.
You start right away.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're 3 weeks out, yes. I mean, early on, PT helps with normalizing your gait pattern, with isometric strengthening, with swelling control, things like that, so that we can guide the healing process, so we can impart loads upon that healing tissue that will help it know how to heal best. So she should get in as quickly as possible at this point.
Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. Lori, senior clinical physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today, all those aches and pains. Lori Tyne-Brody, senior clinical physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, one of our guests, the other Bill Boisenault. Bill, associate professor in physical therapy in the UW Medical School, and lots of callers who've been waiting, so we'll go right to the phones here, and to Margaret in Appleton. Margaret, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm trying to, I realize that foot and ankle and knees and all of those joints are all connected, and I've had issues for a number of years, starting with what they told me was a posterior tibial tendon, I guess, malfunction or non-function. Mm-hmm. I was having a lot of pain, and I went to a podiatrist several years ago who put me in a Ritchie-style brace, which did help, except that I kept developing calluses on my large toe. And when I would have times when I would have to be on my feet for very long periods of time, I would develop like a bleed underneath the callus, that sort of thing. This led to chronic infections that I had periodically, and had developed over the years osteomyelitis in that toe. I am diabetic, and I did go through, I've been to four different podiatrists, and all wanted to put me in this same Ritchie-style brace. Part of the problem then was because of the having the brace on the one foot, it was very difficult to find something to compensate with the other foot. So my knee problems got worse.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking at all of these things together. I finally found an orthotist who made a brace that has a hard shell that comes up the front of my leg and has what he calls a tibial notch to try to lock my foot in place, and that helped. Except that I sort of moved the callus to a different spot on my big toe. And I also have a very large navicular now prominence that is very painful when I walk, you know, for large periods of time. So all those things kind of go together. My knees hurt when I wear the brace. You know, I'm having trouble. The brace is so large that my left foot, I can't quite figure out how to get my knees lined up, you know, correctly. So I end up with knee pain. So I guess the question was, I'm trying to figure out where to go, if there's some kind of a comprehensive place to go where they can help evaluate all of these things.
Like a gait clinic or something.
Yeah, that's why I was asking whether there is something like that.
Sure. Let's see what we've got here.
Yeah, Margaret, I would think yes in your area, but I don't know anything offhand. If you are willing to leave your contact information, I can get you in touch with somebody who is up in Appleton, and I know he could help you find what you're looking for.
So we'll put you on hold, and Jim Packard will, let's see, we'll get you on hold there, Margaret. Jim Packard will talk to you and get your information, and Bill will get back to you. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Elaine in Baraboo next. Elaine, hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Great, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I'm calling about my husband, who is 57. He's been an elite athlete all of his life, but he told me that he has one leg shorter than the other, a half an inch. Every day he twists his back until he hears a very satisfying crack, lower back. And now he's back, and I don't know if this is related. It really makes me sick to watch him do that. It just seems to me that it's going to end up being bad every day. And now he's got a pain in his lower back that has lasted for at least a week, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. So I'm saying he should go to an orthopedist and see about a lift in his one leg so that the gait is stabilized, and that he shouldn't crack his back like that.
Okay.
Well, two good questions. And I understand sometimes the challenge of convincing somebody in your family to follow through. But in terms of the leg discrepancy, typically everybody has a bit of a discrepancy. But when you're starting to get to a quarter to a half an inch, if that's truly what it is, it can cause issues over time, especially people who do a lot of activity on their feet, whether it's walking, running, jumping, etc. The challenge is, where is that leg discrepancy coming from? It could be a local foot problem. You can have a fallen arch on one side and not on the other side. It could be in the actual length of bones in your lower leg or upper leg, or it could be the pelvis. And so sometimes just putting a lift in doesn't necessarily correct it or not correct it appropriately. So I think, you know, seeing an orthopedic physical therapist who could examine you, they can sort out to what degree is there a discrepancy and where is that discrepancy coming from, and that could lead to the appropriate treatment. And then whoever he goes and sees, they could also examine his back and maybe show him other ways to stretch his back and increase flexibility as opposed to cracking it with however he's doing that. But I would agree. I think it's good for him to be seen by somebody who can really address both of these things at the same time.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls here in just a minute, but let's take an email first. I've been struggling with lateral pain. This is Mandy in Lake Geneva, during running for 2 years now. Running's my life. I've been to multiple PTs, physicians, chiropractors. Just recently diagnosed with ITBS in the left knee and snapping hip syndrome in the right hip. I was told to stretch out my left IT band, but I read that the IT band can't actually be stretched as it is not a muscle. Is that correct?
Oh, she touched right on the debate. There are those who say you can't stretch it. It's a thick band, and there are those who say you can. Can you really stretch the band? Probably not. But the band attaches to muscles around the hip, which can be stretched. So I'd say if you are doing stretching and you're feeling stretching around your hip, and it's associated with a decrease in your knee pain, then I'd say go ahead and do some stretching. Stretching, for the most part, doesn't hurt most people unless you're systemically hypermobile. And in terms of the other things, you know, it sounds like she's seen multiple people and gotten multiple advice. It seems odd, for as long as it's been going on and as many times as she's been seen, to come up with a diagnosis of iliotibial band syndrome, because that's sort of a quick and dirty diagnosis. So it's not that difficult to treat. So I would think that her symptoms should have resolved by now, having seen so many people. So I'm just wondering what's being missed. My sense is that something else is being missed.
Okay. All right. Sandy in Wautoma, let's turn to you next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I have a question about lower back pain and leg pain. I've been having facet injections in my L3, L4, L4, L5 area in my lower back. It seems that when I have those injections, the pain and the numbness and the tingling in my legs gets better for a short time, and then it goes back to where it was. Well, now I just went and had an ablation about a month ago to try to redirect those nerves, and it only lasted for about 4 or 5 days, and I'm back to where I was before with the night pain. I do take 1,600 milligrams of gabapentin a day, and I am a diabetic.
Okay. Sandy, have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
Yes, I have. And they've given me many exercises and things to do.
Okay.
And when I'm feeling good, that you know, I really try to push it to stretch my legs. They say my legs are weak, even though they look like a runner's legs.
Okay. All right.
So I'm just wondering what my next step should be. I've been seeing an anesthesiologist for these injections. I've had MRIs. I do have arthritis and some degenerative disease in my back, but I was just wondering if it's the steroids that are making the difference, why the ablation didn't work.
Yeah, that certainly could be. And you mentioned you have diabetes, is that correct?
Yes, I do, and I've had bypass surgery also, so
all right.
Heart disease.
Okay, and so the nerve pain in particular, they really have associated that. I've told you it's not related to the diabetes. It is related to your spine?
Well, they keep telling me it's the diabetes, but once I have the injections, it goes away. So I don't think it's with the diabetes. I really think it's with the back.
Okay. All right. Well, it does kind of sound that way, but that, I can understand why there's been maybe some difficulty nailing this down. Have you seen a back specialist, a physician, an orthopedist, or a neurosurgeon, or a specialist?
Yes, I did. I saw a gentleman at a back clinic in Appleton a few years back, and he finally got to the point where he just told me to. I also have fibromyalgia.
Okay.
And he finally, I called him, can I get more injections? And he said, it's just your fibromyalgia, get over it, you know.
Okay.
And so that's how I got hooked up with this other gentleman.
Okay. All right. Well, considering all of those things, have you had rehabilitation in a pool, in the water?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I've done the rehabilitation in the pool, but it flares the fibromyalgia up.
Well, then it's probably not being dosed properly. What I've found with patients who have fibromyalgia in the pool, we just have a tendency to overshoot what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. So exercises, particularly exercise in the pool, has to be dosed just like your medication has to be dosed right for you, and it has to be looked at in the context of everything else you do during the day.
Right.
So my guess is that it wasn't set up for you correctly or progressed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So you might try again with another provider.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Amanda in Potosi, thanks for waiting. Hello. Oh, wait a second here. We'll get you on right now. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
My question is, I've had this problem since I was 13 years old. That's when my mother decided that I should start going to chiropractors because my left hip will always pop out. And then when it pops out, it grinds, so of course it hurts. And it will pop out if I'm sitting, laying, pretty much doing anything. And I've done exercises, I've tried water therapy, and I don't know what else to do.
Hmm. The pain, when you say hip, is it like in the groin? Is it out of the side of your hip? Is it in your back?
It's my hip itself. It literally just pops right out.
Okay.
I just to the point where if I move my leg, it feels like a jabbing feeling.
Okay. All right. Have you had imaging besides an x-ray of that hip?
Yeah, I've had only x-rays and MRIs, and they said, oh, it's just fine. It just pops out. I'm like, well, why? We don't know.
Okay. All right. It's unusual for the hip to pop out, you know, first of all, because typically it's a deep-set joint. It's very stable. Unless there's something congenital related to the shape of your hip that might allow that to happen, but they would have seen that on an x-ray and an MRI as well.
I do have an extra bone in my body that was deformity. Would that be part of it?
Is that in your spine or your hip?
In my spine. It's like right next to it's right on the tailbone of the spine.
Okay. All right. Well, again, it's unlikely. If this is truly your hip that's popping out, again, it's unusual for that to happen. And there are some people that are just very lax the collagen is very loose and very lax, but generally it's not one joint then that is going to pop out of place either.
When your hip pops out, how do you get it back in?
I have to do pretty much a laying down ballerina or wait a week and get the chiropractor to pop it back in.
So, but you can walk on it when it's popped out.
I can walk on it, but it hurts.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, sometimes stabilization helps if, you know, if around your pelvis, sometimes sacroiliac joints can be loose and lax, and that certainly can feel like your hip. If they haven't tried a pelvic stabilization belt for you, and you need lots of isometric exercise, stabilization exercises for the hip in your trunk to try to get better muscle control. And again, if it really is your hip, also looking at your feet and see if there's a difference from one side to the other side that would throw your alignment off at this stage. But I would really question whether it truly is your hip versus something in your sacroiliac joint or low lumbar area. I understand where you're feeling your symptoms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Vicky emailed us, had wrist surgery last March, scaphoid excision with partial fusion. During that time, I had a cast and brace for 8 weeks, very limited use through July. The first 4 weeks, the wrist was kept elevated. I did all the exercises prescribed and did PT for the wrist through August 2nd. I did complain about pain in my shoulder during the PT, but that was not addressed. Basically, they said it was due to lack of use. Now I have significant pain in my shoulder often, especially when I reach back or try to put my arm behind my back. I'm seeing a chiropractor, which is giving some relief. He indicated that the tendon at the front of the shoulder has slipped down. I never had any problem with my shoulder prior to the surgery, and I'm concerned this may be permanent damage. Should I pursue PT for the shoulder, or will chiropractic take care of the problem?
I'd pursue PT for the shoulder. I'm sure with the disuse and the change in mechanics in her arm, as well as if she was in a cast, the traction on her shoulder puts a strain on the rotator cuff. So the symptoms, problems in the direction of movement that she has is pretty typical of a rotator cuff problem. And it should respond pretty well to a rotator cuff rehabilitation program.
There we go. Larry in Manitowoc, on to you now. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Actually from Cottage Grove, but I'm up in Manitowoc on business. What I had happen back in March of 09, I had to have surgery, a reconstructed ankle. I lost a talus bone in my ankle, and I had 5 hours of reconstructive surgery at UW Hospital. And so they had to do a bone graft, and then they fused my ankle, and I couldn't place weight on it for well over a year. And now I'm starting to walk again a few months ago, and the doctor never told me too much what to do with rehab. I'm actually going to see him at UW Hospital this week. But one thing that really helped me was because I have a fused ankle, I got some of those, I think it's called BTM shoes. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. I don't know. Describe the shoe.
The shoe is where it rolls.
The rocker bottom? Yeah.
The rocker bottom. Yeah. So anyway, because my ankle was fused, all of a sudden I could walk a couple miles, and it was very hard for me to walk otherwise because of that fused ankle. It was just, you know, really tight. But that seemed to help a lot, and now I'm walking a lot more. But what other exercises would you recommend for somebody with a fused ankle that had what I had?
You got the right shoe for you. And again, lots of people are asking questions about those shoes. And as with anything else, you need to match the shoe to the specific situation. And for your situation, that's one time when that shoe is the right fit. I would probably continue with my walking if that's working, and I would mix that up with some other activities that are not weight-bearing. on the ankle, just so you don't wear out and overuse the ankle. Maybe some activities in a pool, maybe some bicycling, some weight training, just any of a variety of things, but also focusing on strengthening around the ankle, the calf, and the leg muscles. Ask the physician for a referral to physical therapy and get in and see somebody and get some specific exercises that you can do at home to make sure that you don't develop secondary problems.
Okay, so you guys are located in Madison?
Yes.
Okay, yep. So he would be aware of. I'm seeing him on Wednesday. Dr. Lang is the surgeon. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr.
Richard Lang?
Richard Lang, yep.
Yes, we know Dr. We know Dr. Lang.
Okay.
So, and he's familiar with the therapist in the area and can help get you to the right clinic.
Yep.
All right. There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. And Cheryl in Union Grove. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to everybody talk about this IT band, and thank you so much for the explanation of what it is that's been bothering me for so long. I can tell you, though, that I actually found relief from this problem.
Mm-hmm. Great.
There's a machine at the gym. It's almost like a Thighmaster. But you push in and you push out with your knees. You sit down on your bottom.
Yep.
And you push in, you push out, and you adjust the weight, obviously, as much as you can handle. After a couple weeks of that, I was amazed how much my hips stopped hurting.
Oh, I love to hear that. Because that's one of our tenets. It's core strength. You know, you hear Bill and I talk a lot about improving your core strength, improving your hip strength. Honestly, it solves a lot of problems. And as we said, the iliotibial band muscles originate at the hip. And many times it's weakness in those muscles that allows your lower leg to rotate in while you're walking, standing, running. And it's that rotation that happens through your leg that places stress on the iliotibial band and stretches it across those bony prominences. So stretching is only one piece of it. The real key is to strengthen the hip muscles and improve your posture so that you have sufficient strength to hold your lower extremity in the right alignment. So you were right on.
Yep, it helped with the hip and then above the knee. It always hurt really there. I could never understand why. And I can tell if I don't go to the gym for a couple of weeks, the pain comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. What a great testimony.
Thanks a lot for calling, Cheryl.
Sure, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. And Bob emailed us, and he said, I was just reading about the POSE method of running, P-O-S-E, POSE method. Do you know about it? What's your take on it? I wonder if he's talking about the TOES method. He said he wrote POSE.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what the POSE method is.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can't help you there. We have Leanne's husband, ongoing pain in his upper arm just below the shoulder for a couple of years. Diagnosed with carpal tunnel a few years back. This is where the pain originates. The pain keeps him awake. He was wondering if nerve damage could be causing that pain.
Well, if it starts at the wrist, and if the wrist and shoulder are connected in terms of the pain, then it probably is nerve-related. And also means it could be related to the neck as well. So whoever he's seeing, or if he hasn't seen somebody, they should be examining him from neck down to his wrist and hand and try to figure out, is it a local nerve problem at the wrist and the shoulder, or is it coming from the neck? But there's specific rehab you can do to help that kind of condition.
And with that, we are out of time. Boy, it flew by.
It did fly by.
We had lots of great questions.
Great questions and testimonies.
Yep, the testimonies were good. The questions, I always cringe, but
I know.
But I think you helped a lot of people. Thank you so much.
A lot of good questions today.
A pleasure.
And you'll be back on December 13th.
Okie dokie.
Correct. Sounds good.
Guess so.
All right. Lori Tynebrody is senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School, and they'll be back on December 13th. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.
Here on Earth is remodeling our Facebook page to give you more information in one place. You'll find tabs on upcoming shows and our Inside Islam series. You'll find live show updates on our wall, where you can comment anytime or call the hotline and leave questions for guests on upcoming shows. Search for us now, all one word, Here on Earth Show.
Support for WPR comes from Willie Street Co-op, a full-service food cooperative since 1974, now with two locations, 1221 Williamson Street and the new West location, 6825 U.